Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to Blue Jays Happy Hour, episode 122. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Andrew Stoughton. We are coming to you after a 2-3 start to the Toronto Blue Jays season. And not every episode, but often we like to begin with a vibe check. And this feels like an appropriate time to do that because the vibes around this Blue Jays team right now are... I don't know. I would describe them as pretty wild for five games into the season, especially five games which they've not all lost or all won. We are getting a first glimpse of 2024 discourse. Stoughton, what is your impression of how that looks?
It feels a lot like 2023 discourse, which I understand and yet don't care for. Yeah, the vibes. I mean, I've tried to not over the weekend, but in the wake of the Monday night no hitter, I've been trying to distance myself from whatever the hell is going on out there because I know what it's like. I know what it's going to be like. It's not good. And I, you know, people's frustrations are with this team are very valid. I dispute much of the analysis that's sort of behind those frustrations. Like, I don't know that people really, see this team in as objective a light as they could, but, you know, that's what fans do. You know, if you told me they were 2-3 after four games with the Rays and one with the Astros, I don't think that would be surprising at all. Obviously people are experiencing PTSD from last year, and it was not an entertaining brand of baseball trying to accumulate wins while having a team that doesn't feel like it's great at the plate. But that's sort of where I would differ with a lot of people. And you know, if you look at, and I hate, like, this is something that's going to come up a ton, I think, but you know, they had more home runs than the Orioles, they had a better strikeout rate, more hits, better batting average, go down the line, better WRC plus than the Orioles last year, who everyone is like, oh, that's that fabulous young team that didn't have great pitching but like hit their way to 100 wins. So I mean, the baseline that I think exists for the offense of the Toronto Blue Jays is a lot higher than people who are kind of only following the ball day to day realized. Also in the second half, or particularly in August and September, they were one of the best runners in scoring position teams in baseball, which is another thing that I think people lose sight of when you're pummeled every night with dread and with feeling like, you know, there's no way that this team is going to come back once they get down a run, which they did very quickly last night. So I mean, I completely understand the frustrations. Not my job to come here and go along with it, though. So I think that there's better things to come from this team, and I think that, you know, anyone who is saying, oh, they didn't hit three times out of five, so then they can't hit, is sort of missing the big picture and missing lessons of last year.
Yeah, and I think I've established myself as a relatively left-brained type of person, both professionally and people who know me personally, and what I will say is that when you try and tell other people how to feel, that experience generally doesn't go well. So for me to say, hey, Blue Jays fans, you're wrong to feel frustrated about this team, is not the way I would go about it. But what I would say is that the Rays series, from my perspective, is an unequivocal win for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Sure.
So like you're talking about 80% of what we've seen so far is splitting games at Tropicana Field, which is very difficult to do against a very strong Rays team. We know that the Blue Jays' history there is dubious, to say the least. And so it's odd because prior to the season, once we knew how the offseason had wrapped up, it was pretty clear that there was a relatively intense cynicism about this team and that they might need to start quickly in order to win some people over and get some grace from the fan base. And at the same time, you could also see the early schedule was going to be brutal. And so like these two things coming into conflict is kind of unfortunate from that perspective, because I think the Blue Jays have been fine so far. It's just been weird because none of the games have been particularly competitive, but splitting a couple games in Tampa Bay is a good outcome for them. And then they've had one, you know, we are recording after one unfortunate effort and game. And I'm not gonna be like, and you can even take positives out of that, because you can't. It was the type of game that there's really nothing to take out of. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa was surprisingly effective on the mound. that's what I'd say for Tuesday night's effort. But I don't know. Like, again, with five games, it's hard to have a broad opinion about anything related to a team. Well,
it turns out for a lot of people it isn't. But yeah.
Well, that's because of the whole confirmation bias of it all, right? Like, that's true. You come into the season and your thought is, this Blue Jays team is underwhelming, this Blue Jays team cannot hit, this Blue Jays team is not going to be fun to watch, and then they get no hit by an unheralded pitcher, and then in two of the other games, the offense doesn't really show up either. It's understandable. And again, I think one thing you pointed out just there that is interesting and probably also true is that people, even if they're coming to a conclusion for reasons that might feel, you know, underserved by the facts or overestimating small sample sizes, things like that, that doesn't mean they're wrong. Like, the Blue Jays may be a painfully boring team to watch that cannot score runs this year. That is in play for the Blue Jays, and I'm not saying that, like, you know, their big middle of the order addition was Justin Turner, who was a player that I really didn't think was a particularly good addition. Like, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is someone who right now projects to get more run than you'd want, although that may change as the season goes on. Like, Davis Schneider's this wild card, whatever. There's all these reasons you could point to and say, like, this is an offense that is not going to be particularly potent, but it's important to have a level of humility, I think, as well, and be like, oh, five games isn't enough to tell me that I'm right about everything. But obviously that's not how most people feel.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, people will tell you, well, it's not five games, it's 167 games or whatever, right? Because there are a lot of similarities to last year. And I think completely reasonably people look at the lineup and say, well, they didn't get better and they needed to, and so why would we expect it to be any different? And I can't argue with that. I think they didn't do enough, you know, offensively. I think they are relying a lot on guys who, you know, need to bounce back. And it's as much as I would love to and do point to track records. And I think, you know, Vlad and Springer and Kirk and all those guys have been better and shown they can be better. You know, also when you do that stuff, the most recent year does mean more than the ones, you know, farther back in the past, right? So, there's completely reasonable reasons to be concerned about this team. It just personally irks me, and I don't care. I hate when it's like, oh, they're fans, they're passionate. I'm like, yeah, no, I don't care. Your passion doesn't give you license to just to say whatever dumb thing comes out of your brain without, you know, anybody being able to push back on it. And it's when it's like, oh, we're firing the GM now, we're already, you know, the team can't hit, it's clear these things are true, when it's like, you know, all of that stuff, all the vitriol, all of that is just not warranted based on, I mean, like, we all know what sample sizes are. We all know that one game things happen, or two or three game things happen where they don't hit as much as they should. You know, we know what BABIP is. We know that it takes a long time to really understand what's happening what a team is, what is happening in a season. I would argue probably like 162 games doesn't cut it, right? And I think that that's sort of what I was saying with those, you know, when you look at the numbers and the runners and scoring position stuff last year, and I think what we sort of came to the conclusion of last year was that this team didn't hit for power enough. Right. And that's, you know, that would be the difference. And, you know, and I quoted those stats versus the Orioles. The difference is the Orioles, in addition to like stealing more bases and stuff, had didn't have more home runs, but they did have more doubles. They did have more triples. They did outslug the Jays. And that really, in addition to their like horseshoe thing with the runners in scoring position all year, whereas the Jays were dreadful with RSP for like 3 months of the season, not the full season, but 3 months in the middle. That sort of made the difference. And I think that, I think any reasonable people talking about the team last year was like, okay, well, if they get back to hitting for power, if Vlad's, you know, fly balls don't just go to center field and die, if Springer kind of bounces back and looks more like the guy that we knew and loved from the previous years, I think a lot of things can be better. And I think that's still in play too. And you're right. Yeah, it's absolutely in play that they maybe are not going to be good enough to contend or to at least play entertaining baseball. Maybe they'll contend and be not entertaining, where they certainly were last year. But I think the diagnosis was they could use a bit more power. The offseason underwhelmed in that sense. But, you know, we've seen Varsho hit more home runs. We've definitely seen Vlad hit more home runs and you know, hit for more power. And I think that that's going to make the difference between whether this is a good enough offense and not. And one game getting no hit by a guy who, you know, surprised the Sportsnet broadcast, surprised everybody with, you know, maybe they shouldn't have been, but because of how he was throwing in spring, but, you know, using that changeup as much as he did, Ronel Blanco, and having the spring that he had, like, he was ridiculous. He was a lights out all spring. Doesn't necessarily mean anything. I think they were quoting, you know, he struck out 10 AAA guys in his, like, last tune-up game, but interesting guy, and, you know, Houston can pump out guys like that, I think, from time to time. Maybe they've got another gem on their hands. I don't know. He was pretty unassuming last year, and that's why it was such a surprise to get no hit by a guy like that. But maybe there's maybe we'll see down the line that this is, you know, the start of something big for him. That wouldn't surprise me. But that doesn't really mean anything to me in terms of, you know, big picture analysis of what this team is. But it's a real easy thing for people to start, you know, shouting and popping off on Twitter about.
Also, guys who suck throw no hitters all the time. Not like all the time, but you know what I mean? Like these type of events do happen. It's not unbelievable. Like, I think that there was a level of indignation of the Blue Jays got no hit by this no name guy. Mm-hmm. And it's like a no hitter is a freaky statistical event to begin with. Like even a really good, yeah, like sure, you can get no hit by Justin Verlander and that might seem to make a little bit more sense and it's easier for you to tip your cap in that situation. But guys,
but also he makes 500 starts in his career and does it twice or whatever, you know, however many numbers that is.
It's the interesting thing about the discussion around this team so far is that it felt for a moment there that there might be an unburdening for the Blue Jays. Like, the frustration might lead to a lower bar, like a lower set of expectations. You know, nobody's picking this team to, you know, win the World Series or anything like that. And I'm not saying in terms of the players themselves, like, oh, the players are unburdened. I think that's very, you know, that's individual to individual. I'm not going to psychoanalyze that, although some people would definitely present it as a positive. I think more so in terms of the fan base and the way the team is discussed. I felt like if people didn't really expect much from the team, just a little bit of life would go a long way because people would be happy to be surprised. And you saw a little bit of that talk on opening day with the, you know, initial really good outing and the bats coming together and the big Vladdy home run and all that jazz. But again, you know, the schedule cuts in where it's tough for them to show that life that maybe people want to see from them. But my initial read is that they're not getting the grace of low expectations. So what you have is a team that kind of is dealing with the same stuff as last year in terms of likability and worrying about offense and all that jazz. And then maybe they're a slightly worse team, and yet no one has meaningfully lowered the bar, which just continues to ramp that frustration up.
Yeah, probably true, but also, I mean, how can you really lower the bar when it's when Vlad and Bo are unsigned and 2 years away from free agency? I mean, you only have so many shots left in this gun unless you get them, you know, unless you get them extended. And A lot of people probably correctly think that if, I mean, Vlad, I think it was maybe a different situation because, you know, how hard it is to value him. But they have very conspicuously, and I think this is maybe part of the problem that maybe, I don't know if people are thinking about it in these terms, but like part of why they didn't really go and load up on better offensive talent this winter was because it would have made it harder for them to do the little pivot that they still have in the back of their minds, you know, which might come at a point at the end of this year. You know, that's the whole darkest timeline thing, right? So I don't know how you could lower the bar. It's like, oh, we're just going to take a year back and then we're going to go into Bo and Vlad's walk year. Like that doesn't compute, especially for people who, you know, have been like dying and aching for, you know, a really great year of, or a really great, you know, been thinking that this is a great era of Toronto Blue Jays baseball that we've embarked on. And we've seen, you know, a taste of it. We've seen the roster look like it should be, you know, among the contenders for the World Series. And it just hasn't really come together the way that it should. Like, not that it could, it should be a much more fruitful era for this team, I think, just based on the talent that they've had. And that's part of what underlies all the frustration.
There's also just an element of weirdness that has been associated with the beginning of the Blue Jays season. I found like you don't have a single particularly close game, so the bullpen usage is a bit odd because you don't really know what's on John Schneider's minds in terms of hierarchy at a time when he's missing guys. You've got Bo Bichette with all the errors out of the gate, which of course led to, you know, healthy and constructive discussion about him as a shortstop. and then he gets neck issues, which, I mean, you know, we see lots of weird injuries in baseball, and the Blue Jays have been arguably the kings of the maybe or maybe not existing neck injury. But it seems like Bo Bichette actually has one. It's like it's a young guy for, you know, waking up on the wrong side of bed. Got the Genesis Cabrera minor shove turning into a suspension. I really don't understand at all. I think it's an element of like a hand near a face or something, but baseball doesn't have the same kind of concussion concerns as these other sports. So it's not like someone touches someone's head and therefore they need to be removed for days at a time. I don't know. Like, do you think that that's a part of this kind of negative feeling as well? Is just there's these, you know, the Joey Botto slipping on a bat. I'm not saying that any of this is the result of some kind of primitive curse or something like that that's going around the Blue Jays, but do you think that just some of this oddness has also helped, I don't know, not poison the well necessarily, it's not that grim, but helped people feel less enthusiasm about, normally you get a little bit more, I guess, at the very beginning of a season. It just seems like there's been enough weirdness that maybe that's contributed.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I mean, the Votto thing in particular, you know, I've definitely seen people grousing that's an embarrassment. Oh, they couldn't figure out he's throwing a changeup. That's, you know, people are like, just, they're so ready, and they have been for the last, you know, year or 9 months or whatever it's been, just to be like, aha, this validates every negative thing I feel about this team, and they're not ready to give it up. And so even, you know, little weird things like a no hitter from an unheralded guy, like Votto slipping on a bat, like, you know, I think that definitely, you know, I think just things have been snowballing for a long time in terms of, you know, the negative perception of this team. And it's, you know, and that's not to blame fans for it. I mean, they send Ross Atkins out to say, you know, insane, inscrutable things all the time. They, you know, even though I think, you know, we've all seen Tampa do weird things with their pitching changes in the playoffs, that became a thing where this franchise is a joke, because that wasn't explained well. And then the players didn't react to it well. And I think, you know, it's very easy to talk about, you know, the fans and how they're overreacting, but it all does ultimately come back down to like the people in charge and what they've been doing, and you know, their part of their job is to sell people on the direction of the franchise and to make them feel like this is a team that should be contending. And I think that's part of the frustration too, is that, you know, this is a team that should be contending, and people don't see it. People don't see why that would be the case with this team. And I think a lot of the more, you know, objective things absolutely, you know, show that they are among the better teams in the American League, but that's not as good as they have been in the years past. And it all sort of is adding up. We're not at JP Ricciardi levels yet. And I should hope not, because they've been a playoff team three of the last 4 years and have been really good. But yeah, it comes back down to a lot of things. It's not just one thing. It's been a whole snowballing of reasons to not feel great about this franchise. And that means that, yeah, an odd thing like that becomes, this is an embarrassment, this franchise is a joke, this is never going to work. When it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, in objective reality.
Yeah, I do want to move from the perception to the reality here a little bit. And coming into the season, I think most people would have said the strength of the Blue Jays is the pitching staff, but in particular, the rotation. And with Kevin Gausman showing well in his first outing, seems to be on the right track. You know, not a great first career start from Bowden Francis, and we can get to that a little bit later. But generally speaking, the rotation looks like the rotation, with the possibility of Alek Manoah making an impact at some point down the road, or Yariel Rodriguez. We don't know for sure what's going to happen there, but I think people would still have a relatively high level of confidence in this rotation. But you've had a little bit of concern, you know, arise about both other aspects of the team, which is, you know, the lineup, just generally not scoring runs or not getting hits. Obviously, the time we're recording after a no-hitter makes that feel a little bit more salient. And then the bullpen with the suspension, and then you've got the two guys on the IL at the moment. When you think about the Blue Jays in, like, not necessarily the 2024 season, but like the next little bit, the next few weeks, them getting off to their start to the year, what is more of a concern for you in the short term, that bullpen or the lineup?
Yeah, it probably is the bullpen. I mean, like you say, they haven't really played competitive games yet. I was joking on Twitter, you know, Nate Pearson coming in with a 6-run lead. I'm like, okay, I think I'm comfortable with that, you know, which is a shame to sort of be that place. And that's probably, you know, that's a bit tongue in cheek, but, you know, he's not shown to be a reliable, you know, big league pitcher at this point in his career. And he's a guy who's not the first line of defense, but, you know, you'll see him earlier in games if needed. And yeah, like just the way that pecking order has been disrupted by the injuries to Swanson and Romano is tough. I think, you know, they have some really good arms back there. You know, I got a lot of time for Jimmy Garcia, and I have a lot of time for Chad Green, and Tim Mesa has been, you know, outstanding. He had a great year last year, but yeah, I think they were, you know, not more quantity than quality last year, but maybe to an extent, which is why they went out and got Jordan Hicks at the trade deadline, right? So when you deplete that quantity, it does become a bit of a concern. And I think we will, if they ever hit enough to be in a competitive game, I joke, but like, because that's dumb, because their pitching is so good that they will be in competitive games even if they're not scoring runs, because Kevin Gausman and Chris Bassett and Jose Berrios, you know, that's just going to happen. Like you say, Bowden Francis, not great. Did strike out a bunch of guys, but not great. So yeah, I think it is the bullpen. I mean, the lineup is going to be what the lineup is going to be. I think that there are, you know, options there, and they're sort of going very defense heavy, which has been their priority the last couple of years, perhaps to their detriment and eventual downfall. But they've really leaned into defense and looked away from the thing that made the team special and lovable in like 2021, which was, you know, the ridiculous lineup. And I think that as the season goes on, you might find that if the lineup is struggling, they have options who are lesser defensive players, but who will bring a little bit more to the on the offensive side of the ball, be that, you know, Aurelvis Martinez or Addison Barger, guys in AAA, or even, you know, you might see more Turner at third base and Vogelbach in the lineup. You know, you could certainly do it that way. And that's something I think that they'll absolutely have to explore if they keep having games like the three that they've had where they did not score enough runs. But there's, you know, enough there to figure that puzzle out, I think, as we go along. But yeah, the bullpen over the next couple of weeks without Swanson and Romano is going to be tough.
Yeah, I've always felt that the Blue Jays had strong bullpen depth. But when you're talking about your top two guys being out, yeah. again, like if they were already a bit of a quantity over quality unit, then you really become even more of that. You know, you've got Wes Parsons and Mitch White kicking around at the same time. That's not something you love. Like Trevor Richards has appeared the most of any Blue Jays reliever so far. It makes sense based on the context of the game. It's not like he's been horrible or anything, but that's not what you want either. And you mentioned the lineup. You have these levers to pull, right? Like you can reach for Davis Schneider if you think that he can give you something. And, you know, if IKF really does struggle to do anything offensively, like Ernie Clement is sitting around, I'm not saying that he's going to be a massive offensive star, but you could probably project him more comfortably to be close to league average. You know, Vogelbach, whether it's Joey Votto at some point finding his way, you can do the double catcher thing where you get a catcher and a DH when Danny Jansen gets back. There are things you can do. I'm not saying there's things you can do to make this lineup unbelievable and world beating, but there are things you can do to tweak it that should theoretically give you more on offense. In terms of the bullpen, like who are you reaching for at this point if someone is faltering? Now, both the guys who are on IL theoretically can come back relatively quickly, but when you're talking about other relievers, you know, on the 40 man, you know, and it's like the Zach Pops and the Brendan Littles of the world, and you know, I think Pop could theoretically be okay, but there's not that much they can do. Like they could send down Wes Parsons and get one of the guys who like Pop, who's a little bit more of a short stint person, but you're kind of sitting around waiting for guys to get healthy. Which is always an uncomfortable situation to be in, because that also presumes that the guys that are currently playing are going to stay healthy too, right? Like it doesn't always work like that. You get Romano and Swanson back, but someone else could go down. So it's always uncomfortable, like I said, when it feels like you don't have levers to pull and things that you can really do. And they're not the Tampa Bay Rays. They don't have like a million relief arms at AAA that you love, that you feel like could make an impact right away. They just haven't stockpiled arms like that. As I said, I actually thought coming to the season, their depth is okay, but I don't think that many bullpens are well-equipped to lose their top two guys. Like that's just not situation that many teams go into the season being like, oh, we're gonna have four like really good high leverage guys for the end of games, and maybe a couple, but it's just not the reality for most major league teams.
No, that is true, but it's also not Rafael Dolis and Tyler Chatwood and like and Trent Thornton and stuff, you know. This will be an issue, and I'm sure people will react to it completely normally when the offense finally does work and the bullpen blows it, which is just, you know, an inevitability of a baseball season, but hard to when you tunnel vision about it. You know, every single game is the seventh game of the World Series and must be a victory, or else somebody has failed and wronged you and ruined your day and wasted your time. Hard to see it that way, which is not a way to maintain sanity while following a baseball season. But I don't know, some people seem perfectly fine with just wildly vacillating between happy and, you know, apoplectic and like just outraged. So that's one way to do it, I guess. But yeah, you know, I think that there are some guys who can get out, so I think that that's not as grim as it would have been a couple years ago. But yeah, it's don't need to see Zach Pop with the game on the line. I'll say that.
I will say, if people want to be apoplectic about the Blue Jays, wait till the Rockies come to town between April 12th and April 14th. And if
such a trap series.
If that Rockies team, if that absolutely dismal Rockies team can hand it to the Jays at home, I'm giving everyone a free pass.
Yeah,
however you want to feel about that. Yeah. Like if the Rockies sweep the Blue Jays, just turn it off. And if you want to do something else with your summer, it's 100% understandable. Like the Rockies, unless they're incredible, which obviously never happens, are always unbelievably bad on the road. And anyway, so there's something to circle on your calendar. Like, if you want to feel strongly about the Blue Jays in a negative way, that's one to look out for. Or, you know, just a series to look out for where they are likely, I would say, to get a few wins and maybe right the ship a bit after what's going to be this difficult start to the season.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
One thing I wanted to do today, maybe to give us a little bit of perspective, is do a quick check-in on some of the spring storylines. And I think it's a valuable exercise because people, you know, including us, and you know, I wrote about Mitch White, I wrote about Bowden Francis. I'm not claiming to be above any of this, but the reality is that we all get wrapped up in these spring storylines, and then, you know, a week into the season, some of them have totally fallen by the wayside, or it's very easy, you know, a couple weeks in, a month in, to say, oh, that was nothing. Or this other guy who is struggling is now looking incredible. Or, and sometimes they hit too. Like it is truly a mixed bag when it comes to those spring narratives. So I thought, let's just do a quick look at some of the things that people were talking about in spring and see if we think they'll still be discussed as the season goes on. The first one is the Vladdy Springer Kirk bounce back, which is, as you referenced earlier, what the team desperately needs, but is it something they're going to get? And then in spring, you know, all these guys had OPSs, I think 1218 Vladdy, 1217 Springer, 1074 for Kirk, all with plenty of home runs. And so far, you've kind of gotten it. Like, you've got Vladdy and Springer OPS over 800. None of them are absolutely mashing, but when you one of your five games is a no-hitter, that's going to put a downward pressure on your stats. And Vladdy had the huge home run, 450 feet. Springer had two home runs in in consecutive games, which he hadn't done all of last season. Can't say I'm impressed with Alejandro Kirk's early at bats, although there's been some clutch hitting for sure. What is your early read on the validity of the spring storyline?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I would like you sort of shift it maybe more to Kirk and to Dalton Varsho, who I don't think has looked as good as he did in spring. And you know, we look, the Baseball Reference does the opponent quality stat, and I think everybody there was like the high sevens, which like an eight is AAA and a 10 is like a like real big league everyday kind of guy. So yeah, the competition level was less. You can only do what is in front of you. You can only, you know, face those guys. But you know, that's why we don't take spring stats with, you know, with anything remotely, you know, any level of seriousness. But that was good, and so far I think for Varsho and Kirk it hasn't been as good. Yeah, that's obvious. But yeah, I think that obviously the start from Springer and Vlad is what you would like to see. I would have liked one of them to get a hit on Monday night, obviously. I would be, you know, remiss if I did not point out that Vlad started really strong last year too, before really fading. After it seemed like he, you know, kind of started picking up some injuries and stuff, but you know, they don't make excuses, and I think he did talk about that a little bit in the off season or at the end of the year, but we'll just have to hope and wait and see how that goes. But I mean, I think the towering home run was a very good sign, especially because, like I said before, you know, so many of his hard hit balls and balls that he managed to like put in the air just went out to die, and there was a lot of flyouts last year, a lot of balls that just did not go as far. I think that was a story, and that was a thing people followed all year, was that, you know, the distance on his, you know, hard hit balls in the air was not the same as it was in 2021 and 2022, right? And that changing would be very, very meaningful, I think. And so that's really probably all that needs to change for him. You know, people, every time he grounds into a double play, every time he hits the ball on the ground, people are like, oh, here it goes. And even last year, I think he hit fewer grounders, like, you know, in terms of percentage, than he did in 2021. Like, that's going to happen. It's very hard for people to sort of zoom out and look at a season and think about it in the big picture terms. But yeah, as long as he keeps, you know, hitting the ball in the air that goes farther than it did last year, I think that's going to be a very good sign. And I think Springer, that looked really good too. So too early to draw any conclusions, obviously, but less worried about them at this very moment than about Kirk and Varsho. And I think I'd also like to say, you know, remember last year, Brandon Belt, we almost had him off the team after the first few weeks.
I think
he ended up being one of the best hitters on the team, or probably by WRC plus the best hitter. That was, you know, his usage was, you know, he was put into favorable matchups. But like, yeah, a lot can change very quickly.
Yeah, to the naked eye, Brandon Belt looked absolutely washed. Like he did, yeah. Based on his age and sort of the trend of his career, it just seemed like, oh, the Jays had taken a shot in the dark, and maybe whether it wasn't him being healthy or just being too old, he was done. And that's a very instructive thing. Also, the Bo Bichette season, where he was average all year and then came up with that huge September. Like, that can happen as well. I like what I've seen from Vladdy and George. Obviously, Vladdy not so impressive on Monday night there, but he had the three-walk game as well as the huge dinger game. And, you know, swing decisions are a big part of his story. Like, that is one of the reasons his 2021 was so special, is because he combined that raw power with, you know, not swinging as much at pitches that he was not going to be able to do very much with, and really forcing pitchers to come to him. And, you know, if that's something he can do this season, again, like, it's not like it was a disastrous raid in 2022 or 2023. He didn't become sort of a pure hacker by any means, but, you know, he started to get a little bit sloppier with that. And so that's something to look for. Yeah, Springer, good off the top. Probably not by enough where you think, oh, this is radically different.
Speaking of swing decisions, though, I don't think he's swung at a pitch outside the zone yet, which sounds good to me.
Yeah, I mean, if he can keep that up over 162, that's not bad. Kirk's a nothing burger as far as I'm concerned. Like, nothing I've seen from Kirk has made me think anything about his 2024. Like, it's more of the slap hitting stuff, and we'll see if he's able to elevate, you know, his power a little bit more. He did in the spring, but I'm neither concerned nor encouraged. Dalton Varsho is a bit more interesting because he had that really strong spring with, you know, 10 walks and 9 strikeouts. And even earlier in the spring, it was an even better ratio. And there was a lot of talk of him flattening out his launch angle and hitting fewer kind of harmless fly balls. And everything he's done so far has been striking out and hitting harmless fly balls. So
yeah,
I think that Varsho's got a good chance to improve on his 2023 numbers. I'd still feel fairly bullish on that. But the idea of him being a new guy with a new approach, that one is dying on the vine for me relatively quickly. Because he literally couldn't have done more to counteract that narrative.
I mean, I don't know if it was Arden that first brought it up, or, you know, if it's just like, I hate that it's like, obviously very different, like, human beings, but I get weird Colby Rasmus vibes, right? Where it's just like, oh, he had that one really great year, and then it's like, then it's just he's in the tinkering like forever and can't figure it out, and he probably has another really good year in him, and the defense is really good, but weird player to watch sometimes, frustrating player to watch, and just at least so far.
Not the best player to trade for if you're going to sign an elite defensive center fielder. still,
and twice, apparently. Yeah,
to make that decision twice, also left-handed as well. I think that that's sort of an under-discussed element of the Blue Jays' flaws in 2023 and 2024, potentially, is just the fact that they cannot get the most out of Varsho playing him in left field consistently. Like, as good as he is there, it just... That's just not the way to use him. It simply isn't. Like,
and what is odd, and what, you know, going back to like I mean, I don't know how many people are in the front office that we would count as like real decision makers with real input, but like I defy you to find like 10 people outside of the Blue Jays front office who would be like, oh yeah, that's a great idea. Where's the consensus on like, yeah, this is the direction we're moving in. We're going to have two left-handed center fielders who can't hit, and one of them is going to be, one of them is going to, we're going to bid against ourselves to get the one the second time. It just seems odd to me, and that it's a decision that not a lot of people would make. But
yeah, and
we don't know the constraints, and we don't know what else is all out there, I guess. But
we know that they paid a decent amount for Kevin Kiermaier this time around. Like I didn't hate that deal. Again, at the time, it's hard to find sort of starting caliber guys, and 1 year deals are rarely a big problem in the grand scheme of things. And over time, like if they have to make Kiermaier into a fourth outfielder over the course of the season, that's something they can weather and figure out. I'm not sure how much you could have gotten the outfield with that different allocation of resources, but it is truly peculiar. And just as a note, Kiermaier looking pretty bad early on. You know, there's a lot of discussion this spring. I actually did not include this on my list of spring things to get to, but there was a fair amount of discussion about how he was trying to have a little bit more of a power focus.
Yeah.
And he hit a few home runs in the spring, and he hit a ball harder than he did all of last season. And I don't know, I've always been skeptical of the idea that he has kind of the goods to turn himself into a power threat. And so far this season, there has been a fair amount of him taking big cuts and not giving you much for them, which is something to watch as the season goes
yeah,
on.
Yeah, it's you would think that if that was there, it would have happened before he's whatever, 35 or however old he is at this point. And also what is odd to me too is that, you know, the Jays used to, like, because he was so good at the plate last year, you know, relative to everything else that he does well. Like, it was a really good year for him. And the Jays used to, and by which I mean, like, even a couple years ago, like Robbie Ray or Steven Matz, like, they were pretty disciplined in being like, no, we got a ton of value out of you for a cheap price. And yeah, your price is going, we're not going to throw money at you because of what you did last year. We're not like, thank you very much for your service. We nailed a bargain here, and now it's time to move on and find the next one. And so that's, you know, it just feels like they're out of ideas when they go and do a thing like that, and not a thing that they might have done a couple years prior.
Yeah, they definitely got as much as they possibly could have predicted from Kiermaier in 2023. And yeah, it feels like someone who goes to a roulette wheel, puts it all on black, wins, and then it's like, let's do it again. Like,
yeah.
Like we can really do it. It's like, you know, you're talking about a 33-34-year-old defensive oriented player with durability issues who has only had this one decent offensive season in a long time. Yeah, it's one.
And you have a guy in Varsho who, you know, if his bat's going to be like it was in 2023, looks a whole lot better as a center fielder than a left fielder. Like, it's just, it's puzzling. It's, you're right that it's like a Kiner Falefa gets a lot of the heat from about, you know, what happened to this offseason that seems odd. But yeah, that's right up there probably.
I think when that happened, we were all kind of in the state of numbness around the Blue Jays offseason. We kind of let it fly. We're like, I guess the Jays are doing this now, and this seems like the sort of thing that sort of makes sense. But yeah, I don't know. If I could go back in time, I would be more critical about it, because that's the type of thing I would do with a time machine. Just go back and be more critical of relatively minor baseball transactions.
That's the understandable.
The other spring things I want to touch on before we get out of here. One was the low drum beat for Ernie Clement is kind of good, actually. Which I don't think we've seen anything to disprove that. I mean, he could have gone out and hit a couple home runs and sort of reinforce the idea that he's not only a power, not only a contact guy, and that little bit of power would do so much to unlock his potential, but we haven't seen it yet. And, you know, he's grounded into double plays, and it's not, I don't know. Like, I don't know about you. I feel like we haven't really learned anything about Ernie Clement from these games that we didn't know before. And, you know, if anything, the idea that he kind of gives you what IKF can give you, which is something, you know, I tweeted about with one of his big defensive plays, you know, that it's not as tongue in cheek as, you know, it might appear. Like, I do genuinely think that he might be able to give you basically what IKF gives you with a little bit more offensive upside, but that's more of an indictment of Kiner Falefa than me saying I think Ernie Clement is going to be a star.
Yeah, or also of, you know, IKF, nothing against him. It's more about the people who signed him to a 2-year deal and decided that he was, you know, I do understand there's some context there, right? Like, spring doesn't mean like that much, but I don't know, back in January being like, if they had said, we're going to just put Ernie Clement there or Clement and Espinal, I probably would have been fine with that, I guess, like just giving that role to the one of them, saying we'll figure it out instead of getting IKF. But, you know, you couldn't have counted on Clement until you really saw even more of what he can do in spring. And I think what's changed for me, maybe that's just because I wasn't paying enough attention to Buffalo's games last year. Like, I mean, his defense is really good. Like, and I think it's another perhaps indictment of IKF is that Clement is, you know, starting at shortstop when Bo is out here. Which I think is the correct move. I think that IKF is his metrics at third base, you know, for as much as I have maligned that signing, like I think he's like a plus 19 outs above average in his career at third base over about 1,000 innings, like, or 1,200 innings, which is about a season's worth. Like, that's a really elite defensive third baseman. And you know, the fact that he can't hit really, you know, obviously colors the discussion about him, but, you know, he can really play third base, but so can Clement. Clement being at shortstop, I think, is correct. But I don't know. It's like you bring in IKF because he can play everywhere. Now he's not even going to be filling in at shortstop. Seems a bit odd to me. But again, correct. And yeah, we haven't seen much with the bat from Clement. It's probably going to be like a BABIP driven thing, I think, a lot, unless he actually, you know, except for the few times he like runs into a mistake and shows a little bit of that extra power. But yeah, I think with what he can do with the glove really makes him a useful guy. And I think we talked about this last week, you know, if he can just hit a little bit, he's like that's you go around the roster, frankly, which is, you know, part of what's not so fun about this team is like, you look at Kirk and you look at Varsho and you look at Clement and then a few other guys, if he can just hit a little bit, then that's a really, really good player. But they have to do that whole thing where a guy's throwing 97 at them and they put their bat on it, which Clement can do, but not with the kind of authority that means he's going to avoid those double play balls or the ground balls or little flares or whatever. But yeah, I think I am intrigued. I would like to see him get some run to see what he can do. I mean, I don't like the alternative does not inspire me. And yeah, I think there could be some upside there, but I'm not like banging the drum for him to be the starter at third base for the rest of the year or anything like that necessarily. But yeah, I'd like to see what he can do.
I think he's one of the more intriguing guys, just because, you know, there is an interesting range of outcomes with him from, you know, barely MLB caliber utility man to credible everyday starter. And, you know, again, credible, not incredible. Like, someone who could be, you know, give you good defense and league average offense, and, you know, that adds up. And one of the things the Blue Jays have done, and this is not necessarily something I'm praising them for, but they have opened up avenues for jobs to be won and lost and traded around and matchups to be played. And that could benefit them over the course of the season where they find out, you know, who's got it this year, who doesn't have it. And it's easy for them to shift roles because they have so much defensive versatility. And guys who are sitting on the bench right now, you know, Ernie Clement, Daniel Vogelbach, David Schneider, like they could all end up in pseudo everyday roles if they hit well enough and enough movement happens with other players, or, you know, injuries are going to happen as well. So that is the optimistic way to conceive of the fact the Blue Jays don't have a bunch of locked in everyday starters. But as I've mentioned before, the Rays always get tons of credit when they have their flexibility in their matchups, and when the Jays do it, it's not cool. Which is valid because of the track record of those two teams, but still. The two other spring storylines, and we can kind of mash them into one as we get out of here, were the two kind of long men, and in this case, starters. Bowden Francis, there was an amount of hype for him that I felt, I wouldn't say got out of control, because that would imply that people thought he was going to be an ace, but there suddenly was a decent amount of confidence that he would be a solid back the rotation starter, and his spring was good, and I get that to an extent, but I felt like maybe a little bit too much optimism on him. And then on the flip side, we had Mitch White getting that velocity bump in the spring, and could he be a depth rotation piece or a multi-inning weapon? Is his whole thing going to shift in terms of what his potential is, which is something that I was relatively bullish on. And just to knock White kind of out of it early, his stuff in his one outing this year is like exactly the same as 2023. I mean, I don't think that that means that we won't see the velocity again, or it's totally dead or whatever, but it was just very funny to me that he came out and threw like the exact same fastball, and he was more like 94 than the 96 we had seen during the spring, which made him interesting. So he was instantly boring again. I think there's a wait and see on that, because we have a fair amount of evidence from Buffalo and from the spring that he can ratchet it up, and that does give him a different ceiling potentially. But I want to leave him aside for a second. Bowden Francis, I mean, not the first MLB start that he would want. Did you see anything in that that made you reevaluate how you felt about him coming out of spring?
I know I'm not supposed to, you know, make judgments on one start, and I won't. But yeah, that was real bad. The strikeouts were nice. There might have been a problem with the long ball a little bit, as I recall from last night, just trying to think back. Like Buck was talking about it on the broadcast all game, right? Like the location was just not there. And I don't think that's the book on him. I don't think he's a guy who doesn't know where it's going or can command but not control, or whichever, which I can't remember which is which. But yeah, so I think that if that gets refined, and maybe if, you know, the nerves of the first big league start, once they kind of dissipate and it gets more routine for him, there could still be something there, right? Because I think that the strikeouts were impressive, and I think he was impressive in the spring, and I'm certainly not ready to write him off yet, or you know, I'd like to see him get a couple more starts, and if the next one's that bad, maybe I don't want to see him get a third, but I think there's still things to like. I spoke to someone, or I tweeted with somebody, and I don't think their sentiment is you know, unique, which was just like, oh, I hate how the Toronto media is just building this guy up and making him into, it's like, well, Chris Bassett said that he put him in the conversation with Tiedemann as a potential like frontline starter. And I can't blame the media for reporting what Chris Bassett said, but that sort of plus the good spring that he had did sort of start a bit of a hype train there. That you're right. It was probably, a bit out of control, but that's what you do. I don't mind out of control stuff when it's in the positive direction, nearly as much as the negative. So I don't know. I was fine with how people thought about him. I'm fine with how I thought about him. I don't think I've changed a ton, but, maybe it's not there. There's definitely, if you look at the home run rates in Buffalo last year, I think in particular, he didn't pitch a ton of innings there because he was kind of like a yo-yo guy a bit, but yeah, the ball doesn't stay in the ballpark as much as you'd quite like. And, you know, you have some real good hitters, on the Astros. You have those Crawford boxes, and, maybe shouldn't have been as surprised by what happened as perhaps a lot of people were, but I think there's still something there. I think that, you know, looking at the velocity where it was relative to a couple years ago, and seeing him get all those strikeouts, they're positives to take.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, the fastball velocity was relatively solid around 94. That's similar to what he did as a reliever last season. So that's good to see from his perspective. The curveball is a pretty good pitch for getting whiffs. It was for him last year. You know, it's kind of an interesting offering because it's awfully slow and it's got more horizontal movement than you'd think of for that kind of, you know, when you got that slow curveball in the 70s, you normally assume it's going to fall off the table, and it doesn't quite do that. It kind of, you know, whips around a little bit. Like, I do like it. It's a funky pitch. The concern for him, I mean, yeah, on Monday it was location. Like, that was a big worry. But like you said, I'm not sure that's going to be 100% what he deals with going forward. He feels a bit too pitch to me. Like, the slider is, you know, it was brutal on Monday. I mean, he left it in horrible places. You can go look at that. But there's not a ton there from a movement standpoint. Like, it's kind of well below average, both vertical and horizontal. And so, you know, you're talking about what are you throwing to left-handed guys. You've got basically just fastball, curveball. I know he has a split, but he barely used it, and we'll see if that becomes a thing. Like, I see him as that kind of 4 or 5 inning guy, and I know he went into the 6th in the last game, but that was partly because they're just looking to preserve innings out of that bullpen. Like, I don't know. The weird thing for me was the level of confidence people seem to get in him prior to the season. I think he's still, yeah, like a interesting 6th starter, or if they didn't have a million multi-inning guys in the bullpen, someone who could give you something in that role. But I'm more interested in, surprisingly, I'm more interested in what Alek Manoah, that guy who was pretty close to having a Cy Young that time. I'm more interested in what he has to show. Or Rodriguez. Like, Francis feels like a stopgap to me, and he's always felt like a stopgap to me, and I think that the messaging around what he could be got out of hand. But I mean, there, you know, there's ride on that fastball, and like I said, the curveball is an interesting pitch, and he did show some stuff in that start despite the nightmarish overall results. He'll be someone to watch closely, but the idea that he's going to be some middle of the rotation type starter, or the Jays are going to be so lucky that they have him comparative to other teams' 6 starters, I'm not sure if I buy into that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think, you know, well, you always got to take what the pitching coach says with a grain of salt when it's like behind closed doors and he's talking about his guys. But yeah, Walker seemed to say that, you know, Manoah was holding his velocity and it was back to where we hadn't seen it in a while. And he's probably going to need a rehab assignment, but that seems to be moving in the right direction. I mean, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But yeah, I think that it definitely moved the needle for me in terms of, like, is Alek Manoah going to meaningfully contribute to this team this year in that direction, right? I mean, Francis is probably it didn't make me feel confident Francis is going to hold down a rotation spot, and that doesn't mean he can't. I mean, what the fuck do I know? But yeah, with Manoah and Yariel Rodriguez nipping at his heels, it's going to be tough if he's having outings like that. And I think the 2-pitch point that you make is a good one.
All right, we are going to leave it there for episode 122 of Blue Jays Happy Hour. We appreciate everybody who is listening in. We implore you to leave ratings and reviews and tell everyone you've ever known about the podcast as we continue to grow it after relaunching with Nation Network. We will be with you again next Tuesday, as is our normal cadence at this point.
mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.